And next we have Kepler Noss versus Dwight. Rebuttal time, counsel.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please.
All right. Proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Catherine Loring here on behalf of the appellants, Richard, Susan, and Tanya Kepler. This case involves interpretation of a restrictive covenant that prohibits fences and hedges over 6 feet in height, but does not define fences or hedges, and whether that covenant applies to the appellant's large mature trees of native varietals. There's been much focus here as to the respondent's property rights and reference to collective rights with other owners in the association as to their rights. However, it's important to point out here that appellants also have property rights at stake. Appellants have the right to own trees, as this court has recently held in Sanders versus Myers. They have the right to have trees subject to a specific covenant.
Counsel, perhaps you should focus your attention on what a hedge means and what a fence means in the context of the restrictive covenants.
I agree, Your Honor, and here's my approach. We spent considerable time in briefing, as well as below, focused on legal interpretation and construction of the covenant and why we don't believe, based on arguments of construction of contract interpretation, that the covenants should apply to the appellant's trees here. However, for the limited time that we have before the court, I think it might be better to spend our time focusing on if the court disagrees with us on the rules of interpretation and concludes that, no, the covenant does in fact apply to these trees here. Regardless, the trial court still misapplied the covenant in this situation and required excessive cutting well beyond what was required by the covenant. Of course, I'll answer any questions specifically about the construction, but I think for our time that might be better.
Use your time as you will.
The trial court found that trees formed a U-shaped hedge on three sides of the property, the north, east, and the south sides of the property. The court relied upon a diagram offered by the plaintiffs, which is found at Clerk's Papers 189 and 190. Of the 18 trees that the trial court found constituted this U-shaped hedge, the trial court required removal of all but 5 trees. The court required the removal of all evergreen trees and all large mature trees of any native varietal, including all trees on the east side of the property. So no one tree was allowed to remain on the east side. The court allowed only 5 ornamental small trees to remain. I'm going to hand...
Let me follow up on Judge Cox's. Is it the appellant's position that it is a hedge?
Be appropriate to give things to the bailiff in the future and not approach the bench. Thank you.
Judge Cox asked about the construction of hedge. There is no definition within the covenant. The best language and what the court is instructed to look at is the plain meaning, which we can glean from dictionary definition. Virtually all dictionary definitions coalesce around one general definition, which is that you have shrubs or small trees densely planted together in a row to form essentially a wall of vegetation. That's the general definition gleaned from numerous dictionary definitions.
When you plant larger trees farther apart and they grow together and they create a larger wall of vegetation, isn't it just a larger hedge?
It can be a larger hedge. Again, here, we're not really talking about hypothetical. We're talking about what the court found.
But isn't that what the court found, that the trees are coming together and having the same function that a shorter hedge would have?
The court did find that. It's our position that, given the rules of construction, it wasn't appropriate in this case, or that interpretation had been abandoned based on a history that was well documented of 50 out of 88 properties having...
Would it be appropriate if it wasn't abandoned?
If it wasn't abandoned, the court could have found that large trees could form hedges in some circumstances. Taking that as a given, it's still our position that here the court misapplied the covenant to the facts and the trees at issue on the defendant's property. if I may. This is in your packet. This is the Kepler's backyard. Virtually, the primary conflict here regards the trees and the backyard, and this is at Clerk's Papers 149. It's a photo of the trees in the Kepler's backyard. The only two trees in the entire Kepler backyard that were allowed to remain are the two trees that are circled in this version of the photograph. So two ornamental trees, a small apple and a small plum tree. Every other tree in the entire backyard were required to be removed under the interpretation that those trees formed hedges and that hedges should not be allowed to remain. First, it's our position that as to the north and south sides of the properties, there was no proper application of law to fact. There were no hedges on those two sides of the property. On the north side of the property, towards the northeastern portion, it's not a great rendition here with the light, but you have this in your packet at Clerk's Papers 563. There were two trees well spaced apart. There's considerable light. There's considerable movement around those two trees. Those two trees should not be interpreted as a matter of law to constitute a hedge. Similarly, on the south boundary, there are well-spaced trees. Again, that's not great with the light, but there's well-spaced trees. There's huge amounts of light and movement. Those trees, as a matter of law, should not be interpreted to constitute a hedge. Even if the court didn't err as a matter of law in finding that trees on the north and south sides constituted a hedge as a matter of law, the court did err in its remedy and what trees were required to be removed. While the remedy itself in terms of an injunction is reviewed for abuse of discretion, here, if it's not an appropriate application of the covenant of the law to the facts, the court can review that de novo and has done so to hold that the court's interpretation goes beyond the authority provided by the covenant.
So trees on opposite ends of the lot line, no hedge. Trees next to each other, does it take two? Does it take three? How far apart? How big a gap?
Your Honor,
Isn't that a discretionary question for the trial court?
It's a question of applying the covenant to the facts at hand. I think it goes without saying that saying you can't have one tree on an entire lot line goes too far. At some point, if you begin removing trees from a row of trees, you no longer have a hedge. You have specimen trees. You don't have a hedge. And so here, the court allowed not one tree on the east side of the property to remain. The court allowed only one tree on the entire, on the entire north side to remain, and allowed three very small trees on the entire south side to remain. So, yes.
You're saying that, in essence, created a view easement instead of a hedge enforcement.
Exactly, Your Honor. He created a view easement. He also modified that covenant to say you can't have any large tree on a property line, while saying in his ruling and plaintiffs conceded, this covenant doesn't restrict trees, it only restricts hedges. But what the court did was modify that covenant to say you can't have any large trees on your property and you can't have essentially more than one tree or no trees on a property line. Thank you.
May it please Court, Valerie Villison for the respondents, who are the uphill neighbors of the appellants whose views have been obstructed by a U-shaped hedge around the appellant's property. First, in terms of the construction of the restrictive covenant, I think our courts have been clear that large trees, Douglas firs in the case of both Clyde Hill versus Roizen and Lake Hill at Mercer Island versus White Track, that large trees that are in a row can be considered to be a fence, or in this case a hedge, if the result is a wall of vegetation. Now,
let's set aside what the cases say for a moment. Just look at a dictionary definition of the word hedge. American Heritage Dictionary says a hedge is a row of closely planted shrubs or low-growing trees forming a fence or boundary. Webster's Dictionary says a hedge is a fence or boundary formed by a row of shrubs or low trees planted close together. Have you found a definition that is substantially different from either of those two for the term hedge?
No, that's relatively what the dictionary definition is.
Okay. Given that dictionary definition, I take it that you would not contend that the trees here are shrubs. Agreed?
No. I mean,
why not?
I actually think this court actually addressed it very well in White Track, where they said, you know, shrubs, trees, you know, the only real difference is, you know, botanical as opposed to functional. And in this case, you know, the dictionary definition might say low trees, but if you, when you're interpreting a restrictive covenant, you have to see what protects the collective owners, the collective interests of the homeowners.
Well, one of the principles of construction is to determine intent by the plain words of, in this case, the restrictive covenant. And so going to the dictionary definition, you haven't answered my question as to whether or not you believe trees and shrubs are the same. Or I guess you have answered, but you haven't explained to me why trees and shrubs are the same for purposes of this restrictive covenant.
For purposes of this restrictive covenant, it's vegetation that they're trying to limit the height of so as to avoid any sort of view impairment for the uphill neighbors or for all of the neighbors, you know, in that situation.
Well, let's take an example. Let's assume that the other side had decided to allow a cell phone tower on their property. Would that be a hedge?
No.
Okay. What about a string of cell phone towers? Would that be a hedge?
It could be. It could be a fence. Actually, I think more likely it might be considered a fence. Okay. If they were lined up in a row.
Okay.
Certainly.
So it's your interpretation that applying the dictionary definition of hedge to the restrictive covenant here means that these trees could be, that these trees violated the restrictive covenant.
Exactly, yes.
What are the distances between the trees in this particular case?
I believe the appellants have said they're between 12 to maybe, some of them, I think the minimum was like 12 feet apart.
So are those low trees planted close together?
I think for purposes of looking at the collective interests of all of the neighbors under this restrictive covenant, it doesn't matter what the trees look like from the appellant's house. So they might see trees well spaced apart, but what their neighbors see is a wall of vegetation, which is what the restrictive covenant was intended to prevent.
I'm not sure you've answered my question as to whether trees that are spaced the distance that you just described are low trees planted close together.
Under these circumstances, yes, they are. They're close enough together. If these trees are planted close enough together or that when they grow up and out, they create a wall, then yes, under the restrictive covenant, this is a hedge. I mean, that's exactly what the court said in Clyde Hill versus Boyson when they were actually talking about fences. The appellant there planted Douglas fir trees along his boundary, which were spaced apart, and the court said he should have known that these are the types of trees that would grow up and out and that would eventually create a barrier that would obstruct the view of his neighbors. And in White Track, again, this court said there's nothing that would prevent large trees from being a fence if it disrupts or would undermine what the collective interests of the community would be. And in this case, the trial court concluded, looking at the language of the covenant, looking at the language of the covenant, the entire covenant, the topography of the properties, that the interest that was intended to be protected by the fence and hedge restriction, height restriction, was views. It was to preserve the views for the entire community. Because this, again, Bauman versus Turpin addressed this as well. You know, if you've got a sloping neighborhood that's got these beautiful views, you have to look at what was intended by the restrictive covenants. And in that case, all it said is for the lower plats, they can only have a one-story building. Didn't say anything about view preservation, but this court held that that's what was intended because you have to look at it all. You have to look at the fact that, you know, the upper slope had these unobstructed views. So the way this court interpreted the covenant was one story meant one story that did not disrupt those views. It's the same thing here. You have to look at the fact that its views have actually been considered by the developers in this case. I don't think it's disputed that the restrictive covenants for Division 3 with regards to the building heights was intended to protect views, which is why the lower slope buildings have height restrictions. I think I believe the appellants have already acknowledged that that was intended to protect views. So clearly, they were considering views. So in the same vein, the height restriction on the fence and hedges was intended to preserve views. The appellants have argued that the earlier division, Division 1, with the same developers, specifically called out views. And the fact that they didn't call out views for Division 3 must have meant that they didn't intend to protect views. But that's not correct, because in the Division 1 plat, it said no high fences or obstructions that will impair views. So what they did in Division 3, rather than use that same language, they limited it to 6 feet in height. They didn't need to use the word views because clearly if something's limited to 6 feet in height, it shouldn't be impacting anyone's views. So under these circumstances, you can't just, you know, you look at the language of the covenant, but you also have to look at what was intended by the covenant. And what was intended here was to protect the views of the community. I mean, there's no dispute that this is a place where everyone has views. When the appellants were first considering selling their property, their listing described the beautiful, expansive western views. Same thing with the respondents. That's why they purchased their property. That's why they pay the taxes they do, because they've got these views. So in order to interpret the covenants to say tall trees, because they're not low trees, can't form a hedge, would completely defeat the purpose of what was intended by the original developers.
Well, assuming that the trees could form a hedge, don't we have a problem with the court basically taking every tree off the east because the covenant does not say individual trees cannot block views?
Well, that's true, but the court has discretion, and the court has discretion to remove all of the trees. And actually, I do want to just...
Well, how does one tree form a hedge? Under any argument of definitions, you have to have multiple plants, don't you?
Yes. And the response has never claimed that one tree would be enough. And actually, I just...
No, but her argument was it was an abuse of discretion to take out so many trees because the court did more than remove a hedge. It cleared all obstruction.
Well, it cleared the obstruction because, again, if you take down a fence, you take down the entire fence. You don't take pieces of the fence. And especially in a case like this, where the trees that were being removed were the cedar trees that were planted by their predecessor in a row, which they had already been warned about, you know, well, the predecessor had been warned about, that this was going to cause a hedge. So what the trial court did within its discretion was to make a decision what was equitable and fair under the circumstances. And in this case, if you only removed one or two of the trees, in 5 years' time, those trees that are remaining will have grown together again. So then we're going to be talking about whether two trees was enough to create a hedge. So what the trial court did was, in order to protect the interests of the respondents, which they were entitled to under the restrictive covenants, was to protect their views and to prevent a situation that we're in right now. Because, again, if you recall, in 2000, when the cedar trees were first planted, the prior homeowner removed a couple, you know, and said, you know, I think this was enough to remove the hedge-like quality. But then again, in 5 years' time, they grew together and they were back in the same situation. And unfortunately, during that time, the prior owner was ill, so, you know, not much effort was made at that time. But before the appellants even took possession of the house, they were aware of the restrictive covenants. They were aware that their trees were going to cause an issue under the restrictive covenants, and were told to remove them, and they chose not to. So we'd ask this court to affirm Judge Hancock's decision. Thank you.
I'd like to further address Judge Cox's questions. I think that hit the nail on the head in terms of the construction arguments here, and as was debated, here the plain language does not prohibit these large trees at issue, particularly on the north and the south sides. The plaintiff's interpretation would make anything of view covenant, or could make anything of view covenant, simply because these properties are on a slope. But we know that the developers understood how to create view covenants, and they did so in some circumstances. With regard to the height of houses and structures, they specifically excluded that restriction as to height of structures from some properties. They also...
If this is not a view covenant, though, what is it for?
Your Honor, there are other reasons that we would have rules about fences and hedges, particularly uniformity, so aesthetic or uniformity reasons in a subdivision. I mean, that's very common to want things to look alike and to look a certain way. again, because that covenant did not accept from this height restriction the properties at the back of the subdivision, or and because this covenant did not limit based on the slope of the property, we know that the developers weren't just focused on views. Otherwise, you could have a two-story house on a sloping property, but no tree or hedge over 6 feet in height. And given the court's interpretation of the hedge restriction here, you can't even have a tree over 6 feet in height on a property line, while you could have a sloping property in a two-story house. This leads to an absurd result. It's not what was intended by the developers, which is the purpose of the interpretation here. And it's unfair and both misapplies the law and is an abuse of discretion. Again, it's our interpretation that the covenant here does not apply to the large trees, but at the very least doesn't apply to the north or the south. And beyond that, that the court misapplied that covenant in requiring every tree on the east side and leaving only five small ornamental trees. We ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. And that takes us to